Hello everyone, this is Ben Morton and welcome to episode 19 of the Ben Morton Leadership Podcast and my interview with Haseeb Ahmad. Haseeb is the Global Head of Value and Access and Commercial Development. That's not an easy one to say, I can tell you. And he is the country president of Novartis UK, one of the world's leading pharmaceutical companies. In his role, he's a member of Novartis's Global Pharmaceutical Executive Committee. Haseeb is also president and chairman of the board at the Association of the British Pharmaceutical Industry, through which he is an active contributor to the UK life sciences sector. He's also a board member of NHS England's Accelerated Access Collaborative. Haseeb has held numerous senior in-country appointments, including Managing Director of UK, Ireland and the Nordics for Novartis, Managing Director for MSD in Greece during the economic crisis, and global roles in strategy, operations, sales and marketing. Early on in this episode, Haseeb talks about how at the minute he's actually got three different jobs. So I am super delighted to bring you this interview as he is an incredibly busy man right now. In this episode, Haseeb talks very candidly about his ongoing leadership journey and how in the early part of his career, he focused very much on lighting a fire underneath people's feet, whereas he now likes to focus on really lighting that fire in their hearts and in their bellies. So, without any further delay whatsoever, please enjoy my interview with Haseeb Ahmad. Hello, Haseeb. Welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on the show. How are you today? And actually, for the listeners, whereabouts in the world are you?
Yeah, so thank you, Ben. I'm doing very well. I'm in London right now.
Amazing. Haseeb, the very first question I always like to ask guests, which they'll be familiar with now, or listeners to the show will be familiar with, sorry, is what's your current role? And can you tell us a little bit of the career journey or backstory that got you there, please?
Yeah, so I've got a few roles at the moment, so I wear a few different hats. So my primary role is I'm Global Head of Value and Access and Commercial Development at Novartis Pharmaceuticals. What that means, it's a role where globally I'm responsible for pricing, access, reimbursement of Novartis medicines and managing teams with that responsibility. And the commercial development part is I have commercial responsibility for working with our drug discovery and drug development colleagues on all the pipeline assets up to what we call phase 3, when we've kind of proven the product has sufficient safety and efficacy, and we get a license for a medicine, at which point it gets handed over to the global marketing team. So that's my day job. On top of that, I'm also country president for the UK, which is effectively the country representative in the UK that deals externally and also internally, kind of the most senior role in the UK. And my third role is I'm currently president and chairman of the board at the Association of the British Pharmaceutical Industry, the ABPI.
Wow, so must be some long days juggling those three roles, right?
Well, I think right now, like everyone, I think we're all working long days. Working remotely actually has probably exacerbated that to an extent. But yeah, I guess the days are long, but I don't think I'm dissimilar to many other people right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And Haseeb, what's the sort of career journey that's got you to the point where you're doing those three jobs right now?
Well, probably it does go back to probably quite early in my childhood. So I grew up with parents, both healthcare professionals. So my mum was a GP. My father was a nephrologist. When I was very young, actually, before my even kind of earliest memories, he actually, when I was about 2 or 3 years old, he invented one of the world's first portable dialysis machines, which is an amazing innovation, which meant that people could go on vacation. You know, previously if you're on dialysis, you couldn't even go on holiday. And as I was growing up, you know, I was aware of the pharmaceutical industry and indeed the medical device industry, but always had a real passion also for business. And I guess through the inspiration of kind of my father, I decided to join the pharmaceutical industry. He can probably articulate better than me, better than anyone in the industry, actually, the importance of industry, that as an industry, we can impact hundreds of thousands and if not millions of lives, which is something that as a practicing physician, I think he had a huge impact. But it was really through innovation that he felt he could really make a dent in the world of healthcare. And I probably didn't realize it. It was probably more of an unconscious thing, but that was really something that got me into the industry. And probably only as I got into my, I'd say late 20s, early 30s, became more of a driving force, where I kind of really asked the question, you know, what's my sense of purpose? What do I want to achieve within my career, but more importantly, within life?
You literally took the words out of my mouth there, Haseeb. I was going to ask about purpose, because kind of clearly been very successful in your career and having always been in the pharmaceutical sector. And I mean, these days we see so much written, especially in terms of leadership, about the importance of having a clear sense of purpose, knowing what your purpose is, what you truly care about, etc. Like, how important do you think, and clearly you've got that connection to the sort of pharmaceutical experience, you talked about influences in your childhood. How important do you think that sense of purpose and connection to be in medicine, healthcare, pharmaceuticals has been to your success?
If you ask me, you know, what's the one thing that I think has contributed to whatever perceived success people may think I've had or experienced, I think it would be purpose. There's a Chinese proverb, I think it's a Chinese proverb, but it's certainly a proverb that my father always used to say to me in my teenage years, that if you find a job you love, you'll never have to work another day in your life. And I think that resonates with most people. So I think, you know, within the pharmaceutical sector, we do have the ability to make a fundamental impact on people's lives and ensure that no patient has to wait for life-changing medicines, which they need. And that is that sense of purpose, I think, that can really improve motivation, productivity. And that's what drives me. And I think most of the people who work in this industry, whether it's conscious or unconscious, I think they chose to do this industry because they see this industry is a force for good.
I noticed from your background, you've now held quite a number of sort of senior leadership positions, I think a number of managing director positions. I wonder, what are some of the most significant leadership lessons you've learned along the way that maybe you can share with people who are aspiring to become a MD or CEO in the future?
I mean, I'll tell it with a short little story. So early in my career, one of the earliest stretch assignments, you might say, so people call stretch assignment these kind of, you know, these roles you're given early in your career where they really challenge you. My first general management role, managing director role, I was 31. I was managing a pharmaceutical company called Shearing Plough in Ireland, organization of about 70 people. But at that age, it was quite a big stretch for me. And I achieved quite a lot of success, I would say, in the first, you know, I was there for about 2.5 years, achieved quite a lot of success, and grew the company from 36th to 17th in the industry rankings. And I did it by managing the business almost like a factory. I had key performance indicators, metrics, weekly, monthly. I was looking at these things. And I was learning there the power of putting fire under people's feet, if you like. And there is a role for that, I think, within business. There are times where you have to performance manage a business. But I remember, and if he ever listens to this, I'll call it, there's a gentleman called Fergal Murphy that used to work for me, one of the business unit directors. And I remember him saying to me, kind of jokingly, because he's quite a jovial guy, he said, well, Haseeb, if you'd have stayed for another year, either you'd have killed us or we would have killed you. And that was a real dagger in the heart, if you like. And it really made me reflect. It was a real punch in the stomach that made me really reflect for the next 6 months or so. What does that really mean for me as a leader? What does it mean actually for me in terms of the impact I want to have on people's lives? Because improving and transforming lives when you're in the medicines business doesn't just stop with patients and caregivers and the families and that broader impact. As a leader, leadership is a form of medicine, which if you get the dose right, I think can be the most effective thing in the world. If you get the dose wrong, it can have toxic side effects. So I'd say in the rest of my career, I learned the importance of transitioning from putting the fire under people's feet to unlocking the fire in people's hearts and really kind of unlocking what my own purpose is, what my vulnerabilities are, perhaps the importance of sharing those and communicating it with associates, yeah, and the power of storytelling.
That reminds me, Hazib, of a story I heard from an interview about probably about 7 years ago now, when I was writing a coaching book for leaders and managers. And I interviewed a guy who'd been very successful as a store manager in Tesco. And then he was asked to go and manage and turn around one of the poorest performing superstores. And I think he moved it to being one of the top performing stores in the entire estate for Tesco. And at his leaving party, people said a very similar thing to him that you just recollected there. They said, "We absolutely loved working for you, but we would never want to work for you again." And he asked him, he said, "Well, what do you mean?" And he said, "I suddenly had this realization that I'd hadn't been leading those people. I'd been managing them and managing that store. And I'd been doing it all through process and tasks and metrics." And he said, "I had this image in my head as I walked out the door on that last day. I was leaving behind a successful store, but a huge team of completely broken people." And he sort of vowed from that day onward, he would change his style and be much more of a sort of coaching leader who understood the impact on individuals and not just looking at the metrics and how the store's performing. So it really, really resonated with me when you said that, told that story.
What's interesting about my own personal experience in this case is it wasn't really me. And I, if you like, got away with it because I like a laugh and a joke. You know, I like to hang out with people. The social aspect of who I am kind of made it acceptable and probably gave me a stay of execution. The other reflection I had at the time was I wasn't actually really being myself. If you were becoming, I mean, I was kind of, it was in the early 2000s, you know, I was in my late 20s, early 30s. The role models that we had as leaders were of that type. They were alpha leaders and you felt that was the type of leadership style you had to adopt. But my biggest realization was it wasn't me, and I had to identify what my own everyday normal leadership style was. And that's the journey that I've been on and I continue to be on today.
Yeah, and that's something that so many guests on the podcast talk about, Hazib. So can you just tell us a little bit more about that journey you've been on, and what was the process that you went through to really understand sort of who you are as a leader and what your authentic style was? And I hear your point around it's ongoing, which I think is the case for all of us, but kind of what's that journey and process been like so far?
Yeah, I feel very fortunate and blessed that through the industry that I work in and with some very progressive managers or leaders that I've worked for, I have been provided good mentorship, worked with executive coaches and had a genuine curiosity for the topic. I'd characterize it by saying, there were two books actually I read at different points in my career. So the one I read early in my career, and I quite like reading these business books, was a book called Winning by Jack Welch, which is all about that kind of post-industrial kind of leadership style of managing the business as a factory and being kind of uncompromising around performance. About 10 years ago, I was very lucky to spend a week on a development program with a gentleman called Bill George. And Bill wrote a book called True North. And True North is all about establishing what is your own true north. So I was quite fortunate that, you know, at the time I was about 33 or so, I really spent some time with a coach and myself kind of unconsciously as well, just really reflecting around kind of my lifeline. Who am I? And recognize actually on the journey that I've been on, I was brought up in Liverpool, which is an amazing city. It's a melting pot of different cultures. But you can tell from my name, I have a family tree, a background, which is not Anglo-Saxon. So I spent a lot of my young life kind of trying to identify who am I and how do I fit in? What are my values? And when I put it all together, I guess I started to establish what my true north is and what I stand for. And what I stand for is wanting to be a better person, be a role model, lead, align, enable people, but to do something with purpose, to do something special within their lives, to make a dent in the world of healthcare and ultimately leave healthcare, leave pharmaceuticals in a better position than what I inherited. And that's kind of the approach I take to every job. But it's really a function of who I am as a person and the experiences I've been through.
And when you go into new jobs now, Hazib, with that level of clarity you've got around who you are, what you stand for, I guess what your true north is, Is that something that you sit down with your team of direct reports and actually articulate sort of overtly to them, or do you allow it to be more subtle, letting them understand the type of leader you are through your actions and what you say, or is it a blend of the two? Because I think that's something that lots of leaders struggle with, sort of who am I and how do I sort of articulate this that to my team and help them understand who I am. What's your approach to that?
It is a blend of the both, and to some extent it's somewhat phased. So when I take on a new role and assignment, certainly in the first weeks and month, I am very open to a degree that I never would have been 10, 15 years ago about who I am, where I've come from, my vulnerabilities, my failures. And a lot of that is just about being intellectually honest with them, with myself, not trying to be something I'm not. But it's also there to earn their trust. And then typically, you know, for the next number of months, depends on the assignment, but quite often if it's a complex assignment, I'll spend, you know, time listening and learning, asking curious questions, provocative questions. But then I think going through that process and earning people's trust, then I would be in a position, you know, a few months in where I can, with greater clarity and conviction, deliver my point of view, sometimes call out some brutal truths, but do it from a platform of being informed, having earned people's trust. What I find is, and I'm actually going through the process right now in my current role, I tend to find that, I mean, all leadership is a form of change management, but that's a good kind of change management approach for myself and for the people I'm working with.
So we've spoken a lot there about identity, purpose. You touched briefly on values, which I guess is the core of who you are as a leader, your most authentic self, if you will. Alongside that, are there any particular leadership models, tools, frameworks that you've picked up along your journey that have stayed with you and you find particularly useful and effective?
The one that I'm practicing right now and my role as a leader is implementing what we call the unbossed mindset at Novartis. And it's really quite similar. And it comes quite naturally, I think, to anyone if you can tap into who you are and where you've come from. Unbossed is just servant leadership, you know, really flipping the pyramid to say the leader isn't at the top of the pyramid. The leader's at the bottom and there to serve people and to sometimes take the pressures, the challenges, the obstacles that are in people's way, take them on their own shoulders and remove those obstacles, create clarity, accountability, and be clear on purpose. For me, it's just a very natural way of leading. I mean, I have to bring this in. I don't know how many times I've mentioned Liverpool. I come from Liverpool. I'm a huge Liverpool fan, obviously right now. Liverpool Football Club have a great manager, Jurgen Klopp. And I'm probably a little bit kind of, maybe a little bit left of centre, if you like, you know, with my kind of, my views on many things in life. So trying to be a servant leader is just something that, it's just fundamental and kind of part of my kind of core. I even struggle using the word boss or leader. I'm more comfortable with leader than boss. That's the model I'm working on at the moment.
I'm totally with you on that. I don't particularly like the word boss, but I think it gets used because it trips off the tongue easier and more easily than leader. And I'm kind of sitting here smiling as you're talking about servant leadership as a former army guy. That goes to the very heart of my beliefs about leadership. So I could take us down a rabbit warren of talking about servant leadership for another hour, but I've covered that on some other episodes, so I'll resist the temptation. Kind of next question I wanted to ask is, of all of the transitions you've gone through in your career, and I guess I'm really talking here about stepping up into sort of different leadership roles as you progress throughout your career, like which of those did you find the most challenging? Was it that very first team leader role? Was it your first MD role? Which was the most challenging for you and why?
I'll give you two examples and possibly for different reasons. The first was the first large leadership role, the first managing director role. And it was challenging just because I'd never done it before. I remember in the first week, I'm a 31-year-old guy. My finance director comes into my office and he's asking me a question. And I'm sitting there listening to the question saying, well, you're the finance director. Why are you asking me? I felt like a complete imposter. So that was a challenge from the perspective of how can I develop some competence, develop an ability to ask the right questions, because I knew very early on I wasn't ever going to be a functional expert in all of those areas. It's not something that I think should be my role. But how can I add value to these colleagues in human resources, medical, finance, functions that I hadn't managed before because I'd gone through a commercial route? So that was a challenge from that respect. Luckily, the business was doing well. The market was doing well. This was before, you know, this was in 2006 or so, before any significant financial crisis. Ireland, the market I was in, this was the Celtic Tiger. So to that extent, that was, it tempered some of those difficulties. It probably gave me the space to evolve as a leader and very quickly. Probably the biggest leadership challenge worth discussing is 2014 at my previous company, Merck Sharp & Dohme, MSD, took on the role of managing director for Greece, Cyprus and Malta, a country in the middle of the economic crisis. And if you think of the challenges from a business perspective or employee perspective, they really were quite stark. So this was a country going through the worst economic depression in living history, greater than the US Great Depression. So the economy had declined by almost 30%. There was 30% unemployment. Youth unemployment between 18 and 24 was 60% youth unemployment. Pretty much every person in my organization who had a job was probably supporting other family members, because the country with the European Union was in a bailout package. Taxes were soaring. It was a really, really tough environment for employees, for the business. When I arrived, we hadn't been paid by the government for 570 days. So you have the corporation saying, well, we're delivering all these medicines to patients, but we're not getting paid. And there's, you know, there's a challenge around that. There was never any question that we would continue to supply medicines, but we're having to pay employees, we have costs, and we weren't getting paid. We had some amazing medicines that had to come through the pipeline to be launched, some amazing medicines in the area of oncology, hepatitis C, you know, potentially curative therapy for hepatitis C at the time. These are, you know, some of the finest achievements of a pharmaceutical company. How do you bring them to patients in such an environment? How do you motivate employees going through that kind of that kind of personal difficulty? So that was probably the greatest challenge. In some ways, also the greatest opportunity, because through that kind of adversity, I think people are quite open-minded about organizational change, applying new strategies. But that was probably the greatest challenge and probably the richest experience of my life. And also, I was doing it with, at that time, with a wife and children in a very different environment. So, yeah, that was probably the greatest challenge, but one that I came through and actually I still look back on most fondly. Probably the best job I will ever do.
Haseeb, I might be putting you on the spot here because I'm not sure, I don't know if you've reflected on this particular question I'm about to ask or not, but as you was talking about that, the experience and challenges that that role brought to you, I wonder if you're aware of any lessons that you learned in that period that might be helpful for you or for other leaders and listeners to this show to help them lead their teams through the COVID era and then maybe the post-COVID era. Is there anything that you learned from a leadership perspective during that assignment that you think kind of we can apply and use right now?
Yeah, there's three things that come to mind as you're asking me that question, and they're all interlinked. The first that I've learned from that assignment was, and I actually used the phrase earlier, I learned how to unlock the fire in people's hearts. And I learned the importance of purpose. When you're in you're familiar with the term VUCA, volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous, you know, situation, giving people something tangible, something to believe in, is really important. So we developed a sense of purpose and a mission statement for the organization that everyone was involved in. So unlocking the power of people, firing people's hearts, I think, was number one. The second point is, when you're in business, there's a lot of intellectual jockeying that goes on around, you know, how do you inspire people? How do you incentivize people? There's one thing I learned in that role is, if you put aside all the management theory on how to set objectives, what kind of bonus schemes people should have, how you should incentivize people, the only thing that really matters, all things being equal, happy people do more. So if number one, you have a good purpose, and then number two, you can provide a psychologically safe environment. You can have fun. Those two things, I think, really, really help. And then the third thing I will mention was, and I got kind of lucky with this, I remember, it's actually a couple of years before I went to Greece, but it's part of the philosophy that I have around leadership in adversity. There was a racing driver called Juan Manuel Fangio. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he was an Argentinian racing driver alongside kind of Schumacher and Hamilton, one of the best racing drivers there ever was. He was once asked in a press conference, I was reading this in an interview of his, he was once asked, why is it that you win so many races? And he gave a brilliant answer. He said that, well, when I see maybe some oil or an accident or an incident up ahead, lesser drivers will take their foot off the pedal. And that's a surefire way to hit the wall. Whereas I see it as my opportunity to put my foot to the floor and get that 1-2 second advantage. And, you know, to some extent, there's some sense in that. If you kind of take your foot off the pedal and think you're going to smash into the wall, you will. So the real question is, okay, what does that metaphoric putting your foot to the pedal actually look like? What's the sense of purpose you want to create in your organization? What are the projects you want to work on? How can you make things more tangible for people as they're going through adversity?
It links to the technique that you're often taught in mountain bike riding, right? Where people say, if you look directly at the obstacle, you're almost certainly going to hit it and come off your bike. Or actually, if you look beyond the obstacle and further ahead, you'll be all right. It's the same analogy, I think. That's great. So a question that follows on quite nicely from that. This is maybe at the risk of making you blush, Hazee, but it's okay. So we're recording audio only, so nobody can see, even if you are. But I mentioned just before we hit record that I was doing a little bit of research on your LinkedIn profile before the interview. And I read through all of the recommendations and testimonials that people have written for you. And there's one particular word that appeared in so many of them, which was either inspiring or inspirational. Now, I found that particularly interesting because it links really strongly with what I believe is some of the very best research out there on leadership, which is that conducted by Jim Kouzes and Barry Posner, who wrote the book The Leadership Challenge. And they found from 30 years of research and redoing that research every 5 to 7 years that inspiring has always been one of the top four traits that people say they look for in an admired leader. So with that as the context, like, what does the word inspiring mean to you? And clearly you've done it really well for the teams that you've led. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, it's an embarrassing thing to talk about in some ways, because I don't want to sound like I'm patting myself on the back. But inspiring for me, so rather than reflecting on what people might think of me and how I inspire them, inspiring for me comes back to purpose. Do you have a sense of purpose that makes you, will make other people get out of bed in the morning? Are you true to your purpose with your deeds and your actions? Inspiring is people who are accessible. Maybe I'll try and reflect it a little bit on myself now. I just try to be myself. And, you know, that can be as simple as articulating and speaking, you know, in common day language. It can be as simple as just understanding the power of a smile at the right time to the right person. That's kind of what inspires me, at least, in other leaders.
That makes sense, Hazee, with my own personal interpretation of that research. I often talk about my definition of inspiring being that as leaders, we always look to leave everybody that we meet with more energy than when we met them, even if we're having to talk about poor performance or missing a target or missing an objective. And as you said, that can be the simple little things such as being sort of emotionally intelligent and that smile at the right time, kind of being open and accessible. And you touched on psychological safety earlier, creating a space that feels safe where people can speak up. I think all of that for me comes into inspiring.
When you mentioned, Ben, the army later, I'm no expert on the army, but I think one thing that I've heard from coaches, which is something I do try and practice, is this concept of kind of anyone 2 or 3 levels below me, and similarly anyone 2 or 3 levels above me, I should feel connected with, or they should know what their main effort is. What are we working on? What is the purpose? And they should they should feel connected. So that's something I really kind of focus on. I'm not one of these people who is ever going to copy in. You know, if I'm going to someone two or three levels below, or even if I speak to my kind of senior management, I'm not going to copy in every other person in the hierarchy on the way. Just got to be real with people.
Yeah, that's great. Hazeeb, I'm conscious of your time. I want to be respectful of your time. So what I'd like to do is finish with what will probably be a few slightly more quick fire questions. I always love to ask guests sort of the two or three books that have had a big impact on them. You mentioned Winning earlier by Jack Welch and True North by Bill George. Is there another book you'd add to that list?
Most of the books I read tend to be, so I don't read a lot of fiction. They all tend to be kind of either business books or autobiographies. So the autobiography of Nelson Mandela had quite a big impact on me. But probably the two books that had the biggest impact actually were those two books actually on leadership and the contrast between the two books. And they were at different points in my life when I was looking for something somewhat different.
Great. And what if anything, are you reading or learning about or curious about right now?
It's kind of a spiritual book, but I'm doing it from a leadership perspective. So one thing I've learned on my kind of this leadership journey that I'm still on is sometimes we can get too obsessed with the future and sometimes we get hijacked by the past. And what I mean by that, you could be in a particular situation and the way you react is not in the moment. So I'm reading a book right now from a gentleman called Eckhart Tolle. It's called The Power of Now, because one thing I'm trying to practice, you know, I've had a pretty good run in my career. But if there's one thing I think I've been too obsessed with is the future. And not from a personal standpoint, but from a business standpoint. This is what we need to achieve in the future. Occasionally, if I don't react in the right way to things, quite often it's because of experiences of the past. So what I really want to focus on is how can I just be more present and in the moment? And this book is quite useful for that. It's quite a spiritual book. I'm about 2/3 of the way through it, but you pretty much get it in the first chapter.
Yeah, it's an incredible book. It's definitely one I think that should be on many people's reading list. And do you have any particular routines, ways of working that you've developed over the years that are particularly interested for you? People are always interested in like little hacks and routines of senior leaders. Anything like that that you can share?
Yeah, so and this actually came from the company I'm working right now. So at Novartis, we have it's a system, and actually there's an app that we use as well called Tignum. And there's a company called Tignum. Tignum works to the concept that as a leader, you're a corporate athlete. And just like athletes, you need rest and recovery and hydration. So if you look at professional footballers, elite sports people, they plan their recovery just as much as they do plan their training. So I wear this a ring that I use, which tracks all my biometrics, obsessive about making sure that I don't look at my smartphone an hour before I go to bed. I make sure I get at least 7 hours per night. If I lose sleep during the week, I'll make sure I get catch-up sleep during the week, make sure I drink enough water, and just make sure in between certain meetings, even if I can get 5 minutes between a meeting, just to kind of close my eyes, kind of mentally rehearse, switch off from the previous meeting. Those little things, and they sound quite minor and so obvious, but it's amazing how easy it is to lose track of such simple measures. So just sleep, little breaks, and hydration, they're really important.
I am so passionate about all of that stuff that you just talked about, all of those little things that really elevate our performance. And I have to, is it an Oura ring that you wear, Hazeeb?
It is, but I don't receive any sponsorship from them. So
yeah,
no. If they're listening to this, they can send me a LinkedIn message. I'll be happy to speak.
Yeah, I'm not in any sort of affiliate program for them either, but I will drop the link to it in the show notes for anybody who's interested, because it's a great piece of wearable tech, I think. One final question, Hazeeb, before we wrap up is, from a leadership perspective, what's keeping you up at night at the moment? And if there's nothing that you're losing sleep over, alternatively, what is it that's really occupying a lot of your thinking at the moment?
So for obvious reasons, COVID-19, the pandemic, is obviously affecting me. In our business, and if you think of the role I have within the industry association, there is a race to get safe and effective vaccines. There's a race to get better treatments, all of that stuff within the medicines business. But actually, as a leader, as an employer, the well-being and mental health of our associates is what really kind of keeps me awake at night. And one thing I'm really trying to socialize and discuss within the organization is, I think we've made great progress as a society and as a business community around remote working. There'll be no going back to what was the old normal. But there is a recognition, I think, that I think we need to have that. If I look at, you know, Zoom or Teams or Skype, whatever technology you use, it is effective, but it's a sensory overload. You get pixelation in the pictures. The sound quality is not quite as good. So 8 hours of that a day is far more tiring than, for me at least, 12 hours of face-to-face. And I think we just need to kind of call that out and just recognize that from a mental health perspective, I've noticed particularly, I mean, we've been going at this now, for 6-7 months. In the last 2 months, I've noticed people getting more frazzled, more triggered. There's more interpersonal conflicts between teams, associates. And I don't know what the answer is right now, but it's something that we need to find an answer to as a business community.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that front. It is more tiring. It does put more stresses and strains on us. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Hazeeb, I know you are an incredibly busy man. You started off by saying how you are wearing three different hats, doing three jobs at the moment. So personally, and on behalf of everybody listening to this episode, just want to say thank you so much for making the time to come on the show. There's some absolute gold dust in what you shared that I just know is going to be really helpful to those stepping into or aspiring to step into senior leadership positions in the future. So thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Thank you, Ben.
So there you have it, folks. My interview with Hazeeb Ahmad from Novartis. A particular highlight for me was his analogy of leadership being like a drug, which perhaps isn't surprising, seeing as he's spent his entire career in the pharmaceutical industry. But nonetheless, I thought it was a brilliant analogy, in so much as when you get the dosage right, leadership can be incredibly effective, and how it can be so dangerous when you get the dosage wrong. As always, if you are enjoying the show, then please do subscribe via iTunes and share it widely across your social media with your friends and colleagues, as this really does enable us to keep bringing you more and more great interviews with top-class leaders and real subject matter experts. And finally, if you'd like to get a monthly roundup of all of the latest podcast episodes and blogs that I've written delivered straight into your inbox, then head to ben-morton.com and hit any of the sign up buttons, or even easier still, simply click on the link below in the show notes. That's it for this episode, folks. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you in the next episode. Lead on.